The consequences of the way that South Africans voted on the 29th of May are taking time to absorb. The top 100 members who make all the decisions at a shell-shocked ANC have thus far rallied around a leader under whose watch the party lost more than 3 million of 2019's 10 million voters, and with it, a three-decade grip on power. Just as political scientist Franz Cronier predicted the day after the election, this collective, which determines the party's direction, is now being torn in two directions. Well, I'll lighten things up a little later and introduce you to the five new MPs who are all younger than the current youngest ever member of the National Assembly in South Africa. And indeed, one of them is barely out of her teens. But let's get to the serious matter of South Africa's future first. It's the tree people, those people whose grasp on economic laws and indeed the reality of the nation's parlous situation right now, they want to return to the old ways, as tree people always have done. They see the path to success as reinforcing socialist ideals. They believe that socialism has never been properly tried anywhere in the world just yet. And so to do this, they want to embrace the offshoot EFF, Economic Freedom Fighters, whose leaders deify kleptocrats like Nicolas Maduro and his predecessor, Hugo Chavez, and their South African cousin, Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe. Franz Cronier says going this route will take South Africa on the road to disaster and perhaps a place where it will never recover from. On the other hand, the ANC's boat people, the well-traveled group with a better understanding of geopolitics and economics, have experienced the impact that the supportive private sector can bring to a country, even one that believes somehow in a developmental state, despite all the evidence. We've seen that through the impact of the private sector, Eskom has been bailed out. Electricity supply in this country, which was under huge pressure and massive load shedding, has now stabilized. And we haven't had load shedding for well over a month. The boat people fret about economic policies that have been entrenched in their party for the last 30 years and done nothing but swell unemployment to the highest level in the world. They would prefer to embrace as a partner the business-friendly, open market operation that is believed by the Democratic Alliance. But to their own detriment, they have painted this group, which has its roots in the anti-apartheid government or political players during the National Party's regime, during the apartheid era. They've painted them as taking South Africa back to the apartheid era simply because these people have a large percentage of whites in their group. In all of this, as a developing country, South Africa needs foreign capital to grow its economy and create jobs. So what is the rest of the world thinking about us? Because they're critical. If the foreign capital doesn't come in, South Africa doesn't grow. Well, for a window on how the 99.5% of the global economic pie, in other words, taking away the 0.5% that South Africa contributes, looks at what is happening in this country right now, here's an interview that was broadcast by our partners at the Financial Times of London. The FT News Briefing is hosted by Mark Filippino.
South Africa's recent election dealt a painful blow to the African National Congress Party. It's been in power since the end of apartheid, but the ANC lost its majority last week by a lot. It now has to cobble together a governing coalition, and the options have wildly different economic consequences for the country. Here to make sense of all of this is the FT's David Pilling. Hi, David.
Hi, Mark.
So, David, just walk me through where the ANC stands right now in its negotiations to form a new government.
Well, since the ANC learned that it got 40% of the vote, which is far lower than it expected, it's been in a series of kind of backroom negotiations with all the various parties. There are tons of parties out there, but there are three or four that really count. And it has to do a deal with one or two of those in order to make a coalition stick.
Yeah, which parties is the ANC considering in order to form its coalition?
Well, it could really go one of two ways. It could go the way that the markets would like, which is to have a coalition of some sort with a party called the Democratic Alliance, which is a, let's call it a business-friendly party. It could also go completely in the other direction, which would be to do a deal with the Economic Freedom Fighters, which is a party that advocates mass nationalization, and with the Umkhonto-we Sizwe party, which is the party of Jacob Zuma, of course, the former president who left the ANC and has caused mayhem in this election by getting 15% of the vote with a party that didn't exist a few months ago.
All right, David, I think I need a quick vocabulary recap to make sure I understand all of this, because this is a bit of an alphabet soup. You have the ANC, that was the ruling party until they lost it in the election last week, and they can either build a coalition government with the right-leaning Democratic Alliance Party, the DA for short, or they can veer to the left with the Economic Freedom Fighters Party, the EFF for short, and then also Jacob Zuma's MK Party. The ANC would have to join up with both of them together. So David, what would each of these two matchups mean for South Africa's economy?
Well, the DA is, I would call, right of center. It would like much more role for business, for the private sector, less redistribution of wealth. The ANC has its roots partly in sort of communist ideology. It's also, of course, dealing with the most unequal society on earth. And so you can see why redistribution is popular. On the left of the ANC, which is really bits of the ANC that have shorn away and formed their own parties, we have the EFF and Zuma's MK. And they are now advocating really much more radical redistribution. So the taking away of land without compensation, the nationalization of the mines, the nationalization of the central banks. So you can see you really have on the one side, the DA, a cautious conservative party. And to the left of the ANC, you have the option of two parties that are arguing for a really kind of radical upheaval in the way this economy works.
So David, do we have a sense then of which way the ANC is leaning here? Are they going to the left or to the right?
Well, I think international investors are perhaps thinking that an alliance with the DA is more likely. This is the option that Cyril Ramaphosa, the president, has hinted that he prefers, and some of the people who are close to him. They haven't really contemplated the other option, which is that the ANC, in a sense, reconstitutes itself by bringing in MK and the EFF. There are many people within the ANC that could not really stand to do a deal with the DA, which is a predominantly white party, which some of them associate, rightly or wrongly, with apartheid. They would much prefer to say, look, our party has shattered into three different splinter groups. Why don't we bury the hatchet and all come back together as the old ANC? This result means that we're in this very uncertain, slightly scary moment where the country could veer in one direction or veer in another direction.
David Pilling is the FT's Africa editor. Thanks, David.
Thanks, Mark.
Well, there's a lot of that that I guess as a South African you could take on, not least that the DA is a right of center party. Well, we certainly by international standards, would qualify them as perhaps to the left of the Labour Party in the UK. But anyway, leave that as it may. It gives you an indication of the way that the world is looking at South Africa. But let's get on to something a little more fun now. And earlier this week, the names of South Africa's 400 new members of parliament were released. Members whose appointment depends entirely, remember, on the political parties that get the allocation of the seats. So if you voted for the Patriotic Alliance, there were enough votes for the Patriotic Alliance to send 9 people to the National Assembly, to parliament, when they're sworn in on in the middle of June. Now, the interesting part about all of this is that there are, amongst those 400 new members of parliament, there are a number who are even younger than the previous youngest member, who's Naledi Chirwa. She was sworn in 5 years ago when she was 25 years old. Well, Ms. Chirwa was amongst the Economic Freedom Fighters, the EFF group, that did not get back into parliament this year. She was on the list for the province of Gauteng. They didn't do as well as anticipated. And as a consequence, the record holder until mid-June of the youngest ever member of parliament in the National Assembly is not going to be going back this time round. Anyway, her record has been smashed. This young lady, her name is Cleo Vilskut, soon to be Cleo Vilskut MP, is 20 years old, and she will become the youngest ever member of the National Assembly. She is with the Patriotic Alliance. Her colleague, Jasmine Peterson, who's 22, that's her in the middle of your screen now when you look at this picture, will also be a new member of parliament, with the Patriotic Alliance shaking up to a large degree the youth, or certainly bringing down the average ages of members of parliament. On the right-hand side of the picture is the second youngest member of parliament. His name is Shaggy Khadebe. He's with the new MK party. And just to show that the Democratic Alliance also has young talent, Liam Chadd, who's 23, will also be joining parliament this time round. Now, interestingly enough, all four of them are younger than the previous record holder for the National Assembly. There are a number of other South African MPs who are in their 20s. A couple of them from the Democratic Alliance, three from the Democratic Alliance, 2 from the EFF, and 1 from MK. You can see the EFF members through their red regalia. But we can't really leave this topic before having a thought for this young man, Itumeleng Ntsube. From the ANC, was the youngest ever MP not in the National Assembly. He served on the National Council of Provinces when he was appointed in 2019. He was also 20 years old. He didn't go to the National Assembly, so strictly speaking, he can't really compete with the group that we've just shown you. But Mr. Ntsube did not make it back to Parliament this time around. So let's hope that the 12, 20-somethings have a better experience after their 5 years in office than he did, or indeed Ms. Chirwa, the previous record holder for the youngest member of parliament, had. Even if they don't come back, though, they will have the fairly sizable bank accounts, one would presume, because they get paid more than 100,000 rand a month. So going into politics is certainly not a bad career option here in South Africa. Before I leave, I want to just remind you of something that needs to be considered when we have a look at the way that the political shenanigans and alliances and coalitions are being put together as we go forward over the next few weeks, and indeed into the next 5 years of South Africa's governance. In the best-selling book, Guns, Germs, and Steel, Jared Diamond traces the history of humankind for the last 13,000 years. In other words, from the time that humans moved, or the first humans moved from being hunter-gatherers into living in societies and thence building societies and populating the world with them. He says that over this time, over these 13,000 years, kleptocrats, i.e. a group of the elite who allocated the resources and were able to marshal those resources for themselves, have resorted to a mixture of four solutions. They kept their position and they kept their wealth and continued it through generations by one, disarming the populace and arming the elite. We know here in South Africa, there have been lots of attempts to disarm particularly the population in the rural areas, amongst them the farmers, but they've all kicked back against this. And there's continued resistance to this approach, but it is one of the strategies kleptocrats have always used. Secondly, writes Mr. Diamond, make the masses happy by redistribution in popular ways. Well, if you have a look at social grants and the COVID relief and national health insurance and, it's quite clear that the kleptocrats of South Africa have learned that story. Thirdly, use the monopoly of force to maintain public order and curb violence. This is a trick that has been missed by South Africa's elite, the governors. But you can expect that with the MK party's rise, a lot more attention will be given to point number three. And then finally, construct an ideology justifying kleptocracy. In South Africa, it's called Black Economic Empowerment, which pretty much stands for Black Economic Enrichment of the Elite. Well, there we have it. I hope that you found this entertaining, interesting, but most of all, informative. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.